What's up, No Nation? It's the guys from Plant the Spear back with you for another episode. Michael, it is fall camp in full swing. They are out there putting in the work, getting ready for the season. We're only a couple weeks away from kicking off against Georgia Tech. So we're going to kind of get up to speed on some practice notes and observations. And then the all-ACC team, the ACC preseason poll just dropped yesterday. So we're going to talk about that as well as Florida State is projected to repeat, to defend that crown. So we're going to share some thoughts on that as well. So excited to get into it with you guys because we have actual football to talk about. And this is what we've been waiting for all offseason. Before we jump into that, Michael, how are you, my friend? And excited to be having you for another episode.
Thanks, Jesse. Glad to always be joining Plant the Spear. Man, we're 2 weeks away, man, from football, from actual football. We have been dying and ready for this moment ever since the snub. We cannot wait. It's so good to be back on the practice field. It's so good to be reading practice reports, hearing from the coaches. So, man, let's jump in. Let's talk all about it.
Yeah, I feel like with what you said, I mean, it's almost like as fun as last season was, the way it ended, this gives you the opportunity to kind of wash your hands of that and move on to a new year. And you know, we haven't recorded in a little bit, so it's nice to be back on. I was at ACC Media Days last week, and so it was fun. It was exciting. It took a lot of time away from what we were able to record, but, you know, I got to talk to a lot of players and coaches from around the league to get some insights, so we're going to kind of work that into what we've been seeing. So to start with, there's a lot of news coming out of Tallahassee, you know, with practice and all that stuff. So we're going to jump into that. But before we do, you know, the best thing coming out of Tallahassee, Michael, and that is the sponsor for today's show, Alumni Hall FSU. You can get all the gear that you want for any FSU fan, from the little FSU fan to the grown FSU fan. They got kids. They got everybody covered. Go check those guys out. 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee. Or shop online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and use code SPEAR to get 10% off. Why not save some money if you're going to go get new FSU gear anyway? So we appreciate those guys working with us over the past year, and we're looking forward to another season working with them. So let's jump into fall camp. Now, we are about a full week in, just over a full week in. We're recording this on Friday. They have another practice today, and I believe their first scrimmage is tomorrow on Saturday. Now, that is closed off to the media, so Mike Norvell is going to be, and I believe Adam Fuller, are going to be speaking after the scrimmage, so they'll give us the insights that they have. Of course, you know, you always got to take everything with a little bit of coach speak, but, you know, they have been a little bit honest. You know, they called yesterday's practice sloppy.
They did.
I mean, he's giving it to us. Mike Norvell is, you know, it's coach speak-ish, but he will kind of give you some tea leaves into what's been going on. Yeah. But I think we'll start first with looking at the first week of camp in the books. We'll do with some kind of overall thoughts, then we'll kind of jump into the position groups and see what we've seen from them. So I think overall, some of the bigger themes of practice is one of the surprising ones is that offense from what, and let me say this before we jump into this, we don't have access to practice. We're not credentialed. We're working on that. Hopefully that comes someday, but we have to kind of rely on what the beat says and what the coach interviews and player interviews and all that stuff. So we're just kind of condensing what we've seen down into our thoughts for you guys. But offense, from what we've heard, has been a little bit ahead of the defense, more often than not anyway, which is kind of unusual. Usually the defense is ahead of the offense, which, you know, in a way, I feel like with this defense, I think you kind of have to look at this in two parts, right? I think some of the defensive players have been limited in practice. DJ Rundy's been limited. Marvin Jones Jr.'s been limited in practice. From what we've also heard, they've been working a lot at figuring out the depth. Like, you know a lot of what you're going to get from your starting guys. Some of the younger guys, some of the depth players have been getting more reps. And so I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, because we think this defense, for all intents and purposes, is going to be good. And so when you see the offense, which was really our main concern of the two, offense being able to do something against a defense that's still really good, I think that is a little bit encouraging, because you know, we were worried about when you go into that Georgia Tech game, they are returning almost everybody on their offense, which is good. That is by far their strength. Their defense is not great. So I think the fact that the offense has been doing well in practice is encouraging when you know you're going to have to come out that first game. You're going to have to come out swinging against a team that brings back a lot of experience.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, and the thing is with the offense, we all assume like, well, you're installing a new quarterback who's learning his fourth system in 4 years, basically. You're installing new wide receivers, and obviously you have the previous wide receivers from last year, so that's not as much of an install. But with Malik Benson and Jaylen Brown and those guys, you're having to get them up to speed. You're having getting DJ and the wide receivers on the same page. With the running back room, I mean, you have a village of running backs, right? And really Roydell Williams is the only kind of new person besides Cam Davis that is coming in to have to learn. And you're returning most of your offensive line, with a couple of new pieces. So you felt like the offense wouldn't struggle early as much, but you knew that typically in these fall camps that the defense is always going to be far ahead, especially because we have so much returning production from the defense coming back this year. But it was interesting to be able to read and to hear from the coaches and see some of the practice reports out there that the offense actually has been doing pretty good. They've been churning along. I mean, again, you have good days, you have bad days. And that's honestly, Jesse, as you know, because we've both played football, is that you want there to be back and forth. You don't want you don't want one side of the ball dominating every practice. That's a problem if that's the case. You want to have good days offensively, bad days defensively, good days defensively, bad days offensively. And so I think hearing the balance doesn't leave me so concerned that, okay, one side of the ball is maybe behind schedule.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny when you read any kind of reports, because people just live and die over these things.
That's right.
And it's like, because the thought process is always like, okay, well, offense did something good, that means defense did something bad, and vice versa. It's not always the case. Right. I mean, you also have to look at, I think, too, which is one of the overarching themes that I have here as well, is like, from what we can understand because we'll get into the position groups in a minute, but one of the biggest battles has been the DBs against the wide receivers. And, there's a little concern about what the wide receivers are doing, but they're going against such good DBs. Like, they're probably not going to see guys as good, at least not often, maybe against the Clemsons of the world and Notre Dame.
Like that.
But against probably 8 to 10 teams on your schedule, you're not going to see a better DB than AZ Thomas or Central Cypress or Shaheen Brown or anything like that. So I don't always think it's someone did something good or someone did something bad. I think it's just, you got, two dogs fighting it, and eventually, someone's got to win the rep. And so I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing to take away. But like you said, I mean, there have been ups and downs. They said that yesterday was an unusually sloppy day with some turnovers and things like that. But I mean, look, get it out of your system now.
That's right.
Let's get it out of the system now, because those things are going to happen. And
you'd rather that happen in practice than in the game.
Exactly. And this is the team that has really emphasized protecting the football. So those kind of things are things that they can see now early in camp and get those things addressed. The other thing that we've heard so far through fall camp is this staff is really pushing this team hard with install, because they know that first game against Georgia Tech, they have a lot of that returning production. That's an ACC game, and we know there is an emphasis placed on ACC games this year. So it's really important to win that game.
Yeah.
And so I think it's one where, like, you push them as far as you can, and if they're able to absorb that, then you push even harder, and you see, because you got to get up to speed quick. And so I really do think that is one of the things that we've seen so far, where they're really pushing this team to get that install ahead of that Georgia Tech game. Because week zero, I mean, again, like we said, it's coming up quick.
It's coming up really fast.
It's coming up real fast. And so, I think that's a lot of the overarching themes, is just really pushing the install. You got good on good. There's been up and downs, and then the offense has kind of been leading the way, but defense has not been bad by any means.
Correct.
And we're going to get into some of the position groups now, but I mean, there's a lot on this defense that
there is.
I'm pretty excited about. So
yeah, and I would say too, with the going back to the quick the install and the coaches, they what we're seeing out there is that the coaches have been really intense and intentional about how they're installing the offense and the defense and the play calls and what they're doing for Georgia Tech. But it's not even just that. If you've been around Florida State in the Mike Norvell era, you know that every practice they're installing bits and pieces for every game. It's incredible how they work through that. Like, they're not just installing for Georgia Tech. They're also doing a little bit of Boston College work. And then when they're practicing Boston College, they're going to do a little bit of work for whatever the next game is after that. And so you're seeing a lot of that happening. And I loved a DJ in one of his post-practice interviews. He talked about how He said, you know, that they're throwing a lot at them. But the beauty about it is that if they're confused or something, you see these coaches, because of the ability of the analyst coaches now being able to coach on the field, they're getting a lot more individual work so they can actually do more installing. Before, you only had the coaches that could only coach on the field coach. And so it was harder to do as much installing. But now that they're getting a lot of individual work, and now that these analysts are being also assigned to different position groups, you can do more of this enhanced, intense install because you have this individual time. So I think that's key to a lot of what's happening with why they're pushing it and prodding. And then also, too, I would say lastly is that I think this is really good because they're trying to also, like you talked about a little bit earlier, they're trying to see where the depth's at. Who's catching on? Who's glimpsing the scheme and understanding why we're doing this? Why do we want to hit this poster out there? Why we want to see the safety come down here, right? Why when the quarterback does this, that the safety needs to react to this way, the linebacker needs to do that? Because they're trying to see what depth can they build now as they're building towards Georgia Tech.
Right, and there's still a few positions out there have a position battle that has not been answered. And so I think they're trying to find out who is going to be able to take that step up.
That's right.
And no, I agree, man. I think it is impressive the way they do it. And really, the extra coaching with the analysts is something that I heard multiple people talk about at Media Days, where they're like, look, now you can even with special teams, was like, now you can get more into the details on an individual basis because you have those extra hands in the pot. And so jumping into kind of from what we've seen from some of the position group previews, we'll start obviously with quarterback. You know, obviously DJ is under the spotlight with everything that he does. We're actually going to be recording a quarterback position preview probably after we get done with this episode. I have one in the queue to be published on the website. And guys, I overdid myself. I went a little too hard on this quarterback preview. We're approaching.
You went hard in the paint on this one.
I promise you, if you're not sold on DJ after this, you never will be until he lifts a trophy. So make sure you check that out. I just want to make sure that it aligns with our episodes because I did a lot of research and put a lot of time into that episode. But overall, I will say that Norvell, you know, he came out the other day and said he's been really impressed with DJ's progression, how he's accepted, you know, or how he's working into that offense, how he's meshing into the offense, how he has control of it. And then, you know, one thing that he talked about in one of his post-practice interviews, too, is how the quarterbacks get a lot of ownership in this offense. Right. And so there's going to be a lot of relying on DJ in this offense to put them in the right checks, to put them in the right positions.
That's right.
And so you have to push that. You know, you have to push that install to make sure he knows how to command this offense in the right way. But he says he loves the offense. He feels very comfortable in it. And I will say that I think there's two things to look at here. And, of course, we'll touch on this in the preview with quarterbacks. But I think that is why you brought in DJU, because you have that veteran experience. I mean, he's played it, whether it's been good or not, he's played in 40 Power 5 games. So, like, or at least 40 games at the Power 5 level. So, he understands. He's seen it. He's been there. He's read the defenses. He's made the checks. You know, there's nothing against Brock Glenn, but you know, when you look at DJU, when I was looking at the quarterback preview, he has 2,500 more snaps than Brock Glenn.
I also think something
that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot. That's a couple of. That's obviously a few seasons worth. And one of the other things that I thought that really came up a lot in ACC Media Days, and actually we got to talk to Mike Norvell about this, that is, I keep forgetting is changing this year, is the in-helmet communication.
That's right.
And so I think that is going to help. Now, it was interesting that what Mike Norvell said, and a lot of coaches said this too, where it's going to help you make those checks. It's going to help you put in his ear like, okay, this is what we're seeing. Make your read and do X, Y, Z. But you don't want to overload him information. You don't want him to be like, oh, what do I do? What I mean? I got so much information going on. And of course, it does cut off, I believe, 15 seconds or something like that on the play clock. So I do think from a new quarterback and a new system and an offensive play calling head coach, I do think that in-helmet communication is going to help DJ at least early on, you know what I mean? To kind of get a feel of what they want from him in the checks and the reads. But you want him to be able to go out there and take ownership of that offense. And I think he's done a really good job of progressing through camp. Here's the thing about DJ. He's not perfect. Nobody is.
No.
If you expect him to, you know, Florida State will post some clip on Instagram and everybody's like, who threw that ball? You know what I mean? Because maybe it got picked off or whatever. And it's like, you can't expect him to be perfect. You can't expect every pass to be, you know, a perfect spiral right on target. There's going to be a couple of throws that are here or there. I mean, we knew that when we brought him in. But I think overall, he's doing the things that you're seeing him, that you want to see him do coming into camp.
Absolutely. Listen, I remember at the beginning of the year, I mean, even DJ said this in one of his post-practice reports. He said, you know, when I came in, you know, I didn't have the greatest grasp on the playbook, you know, at the spring, in that spring game. He had a very limited knowledge of what the plays that they were calling. But over the summer, as they got out of spring practice, I mean, he was just in that playbook. He was with those wide receivers over and over again. And now to hear Mike Norvell say, man, he is encouraged, he is impressed with the way that DJ has a handle on that playbook now. He has ownership. And as you said, they really do. They really, like, Jordan Travis had unlimited freedom at the line to make those checks. Yeah, he did look over occasionally because Mike Norvell might have saw something that he didn't see. But Mike Norvell gives a lot of freedom as he builds the trust with his quarterbacks. And you're seeing that now. He's talking about that in the post-practice interviews of how he's trusting a lot more of what DJ is seeing and feeling and making those checks at the line. As well as the fact, too, that, listen, like you said, not every quarterback has flaws. Peyton Manning and Tom Brady had flaws, okay? They weren't the greatest quarterback. Michael Vick had flaws. I know that makes me sound old calling back to all those names. But
yeah,
these were great quarterbacks, and they all had flaws. DJ is going to have some flaws. But the man, as you said, has over 2,500 snaps. He has won everywhere he's been. He knows how to go into big games and play big time games. As you know, our old coach Jimbo used to say, big time players make big time plays in big time games. Well, DJ has done that. He's been there. So it doesn't shock me that Mike is saying, man, this guy is light years ahead of where we thought he would be at this point in time. He's leading the team. He's exhibiting leadership. And DJ's not like a rah-rah guy. He is a very much, I'm pull you aside, let me talk to you. And that's what we're understanding, is that the players are responding to it. The offensive players are responding to it. I saw an O-line quote saying, like, man, you know, not that they were trying to trash, you know, Jordan or anything. It was just saying, like, man, this is just, like, we just feel like we're jiving really well. And so it's very impressive what DJ is doing. And then, you know, with real quick, and I'll throw it back to you, with Brock, you know, Brock has had some good practices out there, as we've seen. There was a day or two where it was, like, two consecutive practices, Brock had outshined DJ.
Yeah.
And so that's encouraging if some, you know, later on, if something were to happen, you know, we obviously lived through that last year. It's encouraging to know that, okay, Brock can come in this year and he's not going to be a deer in the headlights. He's actually going to, you know, have a full, because he didn't have a full camp last year. If you remember, he hurt his finger and then it got re-hurt in the Southern Miss game. And so this year, being able to have that full time there, I think is going to be super helpful for them.
Oh, I totally agree. And, you know, we want to save a little bit of sauce for the quarterback preview with some of this stuff. But I do have some notes on Brock here as well. And, like, you're seeing him make some big throws.
Yeah.
Apparently, like, his athleticism is a real weapon. He can use his legs a lot. And we saw actually last year, I believe that was his first score, was on the ground with his legs.
Right.
And then I think really just the thing with him is he just has to do it on a more consistent basis.
That's right.
And obviously that comes with experience. And that's something you can only get with time in camp. And like you said, not only did he miss time last year, he also had to miss the spring game this year because he had injury again. So, I mean, for me, really, the biggest question with Brock is staying healthy, you know, more than anything.
Right.
But I also think when you look at Brock, and this is something that we're obviously going to touch on in the quarterback previews, is I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the gap between QB1 and QB2 is much smaller. And that's not a shot at DJ because,
that's,
I mean,
correct. Yeah.
Jordan was just really good. Tate was just not as nearly as good as what Brock can be.
And that's
no shot at Tate either.
Right.
But I just think that, like, if you have to go to QB2 this year, I think you're in a better position with Brock having another year in the system, having some game experience, good or bad, you know. And Mike Norvell talked about that. He was asked about that at ACC Media Days, where it's like, what did you learn from that bowl game? And he said, man, it wasn't good experience, but it's experience. And you learn from that. And so I think that, you know, it will help him get better going into the season if we have to turn to that you know, backup quarterback situation, which hopefully we don't. And even in the younger guys, like a Luke Kromenhawk, you're hearing his arm is impressive. He can make all the throws you want him to make. It's just learning the offense, which he's done a good job, and getting up to that college game speed. So looking at the running backs, this is one of the groups that I'm personally most excited about. Mm-hmm. And so far, I think it's been encouraging, too. I mean, you have Toa Fili that people have said, look, he's the ACC Championship MVP. He looks just like you would expect him to look this year. We obviously know it's kind of a do or die year for him. It's time for him to step into that RB1 role because he's never really been the lead guy. He's always been a contributor. And now it's his time to step into that lead role with Trey Benson gone. And so I think that he, from all intents and purposes, what you're hearing coming out of practice, I mean, he's just a special guy. And the one thing that they've said has shined more than anything is just his ability to work out of the backfield, not just grabbing the ball and running. Like, he's so dangerous as a pass catcher on those wheel routes, on these things, you know, the tiptoe touchdown we saw against Clemson and all that stuff. Like, that was on a pass out of the backfield. And I really just think that he is such a complete back that he is going to be ready to step into that role. But I mean, you're also got a lot left to feed because there's a lot of other guys in there. You know, we touched on Roydell Williams. This is a guy where can kind of do it all. He's got the power. He's got the a little bit of elusiveness there. He's not slow. He's not the fastest guy on the team, but he's got some power there too. And then I think the one guy that people just absolutely cannot stop talking about, and there's actually two of them, and that's Cam Davis.
Oh, my goodness.
Apparently, this kid is just an absolute animal for a true freshman coming out of high school, like literally a bowling ball with legs. I think really the thing with Cam Davis, you kind of got two things to remember here. First off is that he played quarterback in high school.
That's right.
So he doesn't have to learn how to run the ball. He has to learn how to pass block. He has to learn how to do the things.
Protections, yeah.
Right. He has to learn to play the running back position. He's naturally gifted. He can run. You can hand him the ball and say, go that way. And he's going to go that way and he's going to be successful. But you have to teach him everything that comes with the running back position. And then also it's like, I think he's going to be in one of those situations where he's so good you can't keep him off the field. This is the same thing we saw with Zaire Thomas as a freshman. Right. Like, there was a few mistakes that you had to live with
because
he was so good you couldn't keep him off the field. But you're also in a crowded position group, so I don't know how much he's going to get from a playing time perspective. But if Florida State blows a few games open or some of these games against maybe lesser teams, I think you have so much depth at running back. I mean, let's be honest, you might can give Toa Filiarodeo Williams a game off.
Yeah.
You know? Because, you know, the other guy that has really stolen the show is Mekhi Dansey.
Yeah.
You know, they're talking about, like, this guy might be and again, this no shot at Toa Fili. This might be a better version of Toa Fili. He's got size. He's got dangerous speed. And even Toa Fili himself said that he's further developed than he was at that stage. Yeah. And so, I mean, this is a guy that they cannot stop gushing over in practice. So, man, you already just, like, I think the thing about the camp, like, we talk about camp in a 2024 perspective. Really, one of my biggest takeaways from camp is, like, man, if we keep all these guys going forward, golly, man, we are going to be good going forward. Because, like, you already have a power back in Cam Davis. You already have a speed back in Mekhi Dansey, who are almost stealing the show as freshmen.
Right.
They might not even get to play that much this year. And these guys are already stealing the show. So super impressive. And I'll kick it back to you on the running backs with just one more guy I want to mention, is Sam Singleton, the guy who really I think is the most overlooked back in the entire room. We've talked about how he's a speedster. And we saw that in the couple of carries he got last year. Didn't get a real big workload as a freshman. There's also been some talk about him breaking through some runs up the middle. So, like, he's got a little bit more to him. And then, of course, you got Kazai Holmes as well in there. But, man, I think overall, from what we've heard from this running back position group, it's been impressive.
Listen, you know, they say the old saying is a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush. But what about when you got, like, eight in the hand?
And 10 in the bush.
And 10 in the bush. Like, I mean, this is like a good problem, right? You just have, have a stable of just stallions, of Mustangs, of running backs that you can just pick and choose. I mean, you could put the freshman in there. Yeah. You know, you worry about, like, protection issues and have they picked up the scheme as well as that. But how are you going to keep Mekhi Dansey or Cam Davis off the field somehow? Like, I have a prediction that by the end of the season, you're going to be seeing a lot more of Cam Davis. I really feel that. I really feel like he's going to come on mostly more at the end of the season, where he's going to be in some of those almost like what they do with the defensive ends, where they, you know, maybe they give the big time running backs, you know, second and third or second and first off, and then third down they bring. I don't know how they're going to figure it out. This is a great David Johnson problem, great Mike Norvell problem. Yeah. But yeah, I've heard so much about the Dansey kid over and over. Every practice report, every post game or post practice interview, his name is coming up over and over again. Obviously, I've heard about Sam Singleton as well, too. And you remember when he was recruited, he was one of the biggest recruits Mike Norvell had signed up until that point because,
right,
you know, they had been struggling with recruiting. To get him was like a big deal. And then he's kind of like, you know, obviously because Trey Benson comes back, you got Toefele, you know, Tip Toefele, whatever. And so he kind of gets, you know, not he gets lost in the depth chart.
Yeah.
Well, this is his opportunity. This year to really step up to get into that running back rotation. You already know Roydell Williams and Toefele are going to be 1-2. There is, you know, there usually is a third. If you remember last year, it was Toefele, it was Benson, and then it was Rodney Hill. They kept using the kind of interchangeably those three. So who's that third running back that's going to get up there right now? Danzy and Davis are fighting for that. And so Sam Singleton, you know, he's going to have to keep producing, keep showing it. Of course, you got Keziah Holmes. I know that's your boy. You love Keziah Holmes.
Yeah.
And I think he's good. Don't get me wrong. I think he's good. I just think, man, you keep hearing about Danzy and Davis over and over and over again. Interesting enough, though, Roydell Williams, who we got from Alabama, while maybe they're just, you know, he's just that steady, consistent practice person, and he's doing good. You don't hear much about him.
Right.
You're hearing more about the freshman than you do Williams. You hear about Toefele a lot, too. So I think that's interesting, too.
Yeah, and maybe it's just one of those where, like, you're surprised by the freshman, so it's what you talk about. Whereas, I think the thing for me with Roydell Williams and a lot of the veteran guys, I've seen it on film.
I don't need
to see it in practice. And that where I'm going to talk about that with a couple other guys as we get down the depth chart or down the position groups. But, yeah, man, the one thing I don't envy Mike Norvell other than, you know, a $10 million contract.
I'd like that.
Yeah, for sure, is how you're going to split these carries up. But, man, you know, he has a good history of feeding multiple running backs. And so, I mean, this is a good, like you said, it's a good problem to have. And, you know, I think this is, especially after what happened last year, you know, I mean, not to bring up bad memories, but, you know, I said in that North Alabama game, I wouldn't have let my starters even touch the field. I think you have enough talent now at your twos. Yeah. Like, to me, I'm going to let Cam Davis start that game more than likely, or Sam Singleton or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you even start Toefele or Roydell Williams in that game. Yep. If they're as good as people say they are, and that, you know, that's a whole nother, that's the whole rest of the season to develop.
That's right. That's right.
So yeah, I mean, and I think when you talk about the running backs, you also have to talk about the offensive line, who they're going to be running behind. And so far, you know, we came into this season where we thought the offensive line was going to be the strength. Mike Norvell has been on record talking about how he thinks this is the deepest and most talented offensive line room that they've had so far at Florida State. And I think the practice reports are aligning with that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's exciting. I mean, we joked about this on a couple episodes ago. We're like, we prayed for times like these.
We did,
you know, because, you know, I always use this reference. I was talking to somebody the other day at a Charlotte Seminole Club meeting that I got to go to, which shout out to those guys. And also, if you're in the Carolinas, we're going to be doing some stuff together coming up.
Let's go.
Make sure you stay on the lookout for that. But, you know, you look at a guy like Julian Armella, you know, probably anywhere from 2015 to 2022, he probably starts as a freshman.
That's
because
right.
He's just the best you got. Now it's what, year three? And you, don't hear much about him. And so, I just think that speaks to where we're at on the offensive line. Doesn't mean he's not good. Doesn't mean he's not doing good.
Correct.
It just speaks to what we have. And I think the most encouraging thing that I've heard so far is that Darius is that guy.
Yeah.
And like he is everything that they've made him out to be. You know, he's preseason all ACC guy. Mike Norvell said he thinks he can be an all-American type of guy. Right. And I think, like, man, to have a potential all-American candidate at left tackle would be massive for this team, especially when we get into the quarterback preview, the way DJ plays under pressure versus not, it'll make a lot of sense too. Obviously, everybody knows having a good left tackle is huge, but you know, giving DJ a clean pocket, he's actually really good when he's not under pressure.
Right.
So, man, having that staple at left tackle is so exciting to see too, because Darius, man, he has been everything for Florida State. He's been center, tackle, guard. He's been
here. Army knife.
Right. He's been here during the bad times and he's been here during the good times. So he deserves it, man. And I'm excited to see that camp reports have been everything that he has said. It's just going to be, can you stay healthy all season? Because we know this offensive line last year just got beat up.
It did. It really did.
You know, and then Robert Scott's back. You know, that's been good to hear too. Now, it sounds like there's, you know, he's battling for the right tackle spot. And, you know, it's just, can you rely on him to stay healthy?
Correct.
Now, I think the thing is, he's a good player when he's available and when he's healthy. But you also have Jeremiah Byers over there, who's experienced guy, has a high ceiling himself. You know, last year he struggled in certain scenarios, but it was his first year at the Power Five level. Competition breeds excellence. And I think that if you now have two guys competing for that spot, no matter who wins the starting job, the step from one to two is not going to be nearly as bad. And so I think having Robert Scott back in the rotation is definitely encouraging.
Yeah. No, I agree. And here's the thing. Like you said, competition breeds excellence. And at the time, I mean, you could use this. You could use the Julian Armella case the same with Robert Scott. Robert Scott was the best we had at that time, and he was playing everywhere. And so we needed him to play. And over the last couple seasons, he's had the inconsistency of the injuries, and he had barely even played last year. Yeah. And so him coming back this year and being consistent and being there is a huge thing. But the coaches didn't wait around for him. They recruited over him,
right?
Or at least they recruited to bring in competition with him. And so he has to go out there and prove that he deserves that right tackle spot, that he should be the guy. And if he's not, then he's not. It's great to have him in the rotation. He's an experienced guy. He's got a lot of starts under his belt. And when he's healthy, he's pretty decent as well too. I mean, as you know, we've talked about this, and I know in the previews and all that we got coming up, we're going to get more in depth to this, but last year's offensive line was not a typical Mike Norvell level of offensive line, not a typical Alex Atkins level of offensive line. It took a step back because of the injuries that happened last year. And so one of the things going into the season that we talked about in the offseason was, is this offensive line going to get back to what it does best? It's that run grader. Mike Norvell's offense is predicated on establishing the run game through counter, through GY, all of that. And that's what opens up the big plays. Now you got the big arm quarterback. Now you got the offensive line. You got the stable backs. I know we're going to get through wide receivers in a second. And so this offensive line gelling and competing and pushing back the defensive line and opening up those holes is going to be key. And to hear the practice report saying that that's happening. I mean, also don't hear us not say that the defensive line is winning their own. They're winning their own a lot.
Right.
But the offensive line is holding their own. They're busting out big runs. And so that is, I'm really encouraged by that. It makes me giddy for what this offense can do. I mean, can be a high scoring offense again, which in every year, almost in every year since Mike Norvell has been here, I mean, their scoring has gone up and increased. Obviously last year kind of took a step back. And then of course, drastically when Jordan Travis got hurt, but I can definitely see if they continue to progress this way, that we're going to get back to that high octane offense.
Oh, I agree. And really, you know, we obviously, gosh knows at Florida State, we know this better than anybody. A lot of what you do depends on that offensive line. You know,
exactly.
And like there's been times where, I mean, we had the best running back, one of the best running backs in history, and Dalvin Cook running behind a trash offensive line.
No offense
to those guys. But like if you have an offensive line like we project, like Mike Norvell thinks they're going to have this year, that opens up so much more.
Exactly.
For what you can do. And the depth is key because, you know, like you said, even a guy with Robert Scott, if he can't stay healthy, but he's not your starter.
That's right.
Then he can be healthy enough to give a guy a break if he's playing through injury. Because, because they said last year in the ACC championship game, you know, typically it's like, oh, they had to help him off the field. They had to dang near help these guys on the field.
Exactly.
And so, like, just having that depth where if a guy doesn't have to play through injury, you know, if let's just say Byers is banged up. Would you rather have Robert Scott come in at 100% than Byers try and play in 70%? So I think obviously that's a huge boost for you. And, you know, speaking of the road graders on the run game, you lead me right into the next guy, which is a guy that, man, I'm excited about, at least as a run blocker. And that's Keandre Jones. We have heard that, I believe it was yesterday's practice, that he has a dominant run blocker. And man, like, I know he's got some pass blocking stuff that he's got to clean up. And this is a guy, again, that when you look at Florida State's offensive line, and this speaks to the depth and competitiveness, you're not really bringing in these guys from Lamar and from Charlotte. Right. You're bringing in SEC transfers now. And this is a guy that came in from Auburn. He was still young last year, so he got to play, and he did good when he did play. I think he even got like a pancake block of the week or whatever. That was like the favorite graphic I've ever made, with a stack of pancakes. But you knew he needed some seasoning. You knew he needed some development. So now the fact that you got a guy who played a lot at Auburn, that's a rotational guy here. It speaks to that depth. So, you know, again, you got those road graders up front. And then, of course, TJ Ferguson and Richie Leonard are guys that have at least been talked about. They move well for their size.
That's right.
I still think they're going to be your two starting guards because they're just massive human beings that move well with that size, you know, and they've played in the SEC. They have that experience. So I'm excited about those guys too. And so, man, just really encouraged by what we're hearing from the offensive line, because we project them to have a strong running game this year, but it all starts up front. And so really excited about what we've heard from those guys as well. You just really, I think it's overall a question of health. But again, you have the depth to where now you probably got a legit two deep that you feel good about that could start. Yeah. And then as far as wide receiver goes, this is now, I will say it's funny because this is the one where we feel the most doubt, right? But when I asked Mike Norvell about these, about the wide receiver group, we talked about the way I posed the question was, there's a lot of talk about how this team doesn't have a lot of experience, right? Yep. And but it's also a talented group. And so where do you find that difference in, like, what's more valuable, talent or experience? The one thing that he said, and you can go check this clip out, I believe I posted it on our YouTube as well, is where he said, like, these guys have experience. It's just not, they've not been the top producers at their position. But there's a lot of guys that have played. And he actually told me that this is the most group that he is the most excited about. He might be by himself, but I know
you're on the island on that one.
Exactly. I know that is on our social media, so you can check that video to make sure I'm not blowing smoke here. But he said, like, he was asked which position group he's most excited about, and he said it is wide receiver. And the thing that he said was, like, look, man, they have to find some consistency, but it's not going to be a lack of talent that's going to hold them back. And he even said in there, like, he kind of smiled a little bit while he was saying, he's like, there are situations where you just don't have the talent, and there's nothing you can do about that. He said this year they have the talent. It's just finding the consistency. And so I think you have the pieces to be productive. It's just getting them to be productive. And so I think that's where he feels good about this group. And so far from the practice reports, it sounds like Malik Benson is your clear number one. It does sound like there's some things he still needs to improve on. There's been some, I think this is the biggest negative that I've seen come out of camp that's going to concern me, which has been plagued Florida State for the last few years, is drop passes are still an issue. That, like, we're pumping sunshine in camp. I get it. but there's always got to be a little, you know, there's always got to be two sides of the coin. It's not all good. There's going to be some bad out of practice too. And I think drops are the one thing that's been my biggest concern from fall camp reports so far. But I do think when you look at Malik Benson, he's going against AZ Thomas most of the time. And so, like, when you're having to go against one of the best DBs in the country, you're not going to win every rep. But it does sound like he is the guy, and the explosiveness is there. He is going to be the wide receiver one. Now I think the search is for wide receiver number two. I mean, we know you got Ja'Kai in the slot. You know you got Jalen Lucas, who's kind of a carbon copy of Ja'Kai, that's going to be able to give you that depth. Of course, we know Destin Hill's out for the year, which took a big shot to this receiver room. But you're still searching for that number two. Haven't really heard a whole lot from Darian Williamson. I mean, the guy that's got size and has produced every time he's been able to be on the field, just kind of has had trouble staying healthy. But I think it's really right now, from what people are saying, it's coming down to a Portier-Hakeem-Williams battle. And I think this is one where, you know, this is it for Portier. You got to produce this year. And we honestly thought he might transfer. So he stuck around. So, like, it's his time to shine. And I think it's where what we just talked about went to open the segment with the experience versus the talent. And that's not to say Portier's not talented, but Hakeem Williams comes in as one of the top rated wide receivers from that class. And so Portier is an experienced veteran, but if he doesn't push, if he does not emerge as that guy, you have Hakeem Williams right there, who is a very high ceiling guy. And so far from, you know, what we talked about before coming into camp, it looks like he's starting to figure it out. It looks like his body has matured. He has he's a physical specimen now. You know, he was a little heavy set last year. Man, he is toned up. He looks like an NFL wide receiver. It's just because he's still young. It's still year two. He's still got to put some things together, you know, making those catches, making the right routes, or running the right routes the way they're supposed to be and all that stuff. But if he can figure it out, man, Portier better watch out, because I think Hakeem Williams by the end of the season might take that starting spot. But the good thing is you have competitiveness there at that wide receiver two position. And you also have where, you know, if you have two guys that are similar, you know, at least in where they're at as a player, you can rotate them. And if something happens, because, you know, again, Portier's been a guy that's battled injury as well, I think you feel good about either one the way things are going.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, see, with Malik Benson, you know, I think going into the offseason, going into spring and coming into fall camp, everybody assumed and everybody was right that he was going to be, you know, wide out one. I think that was a given. Unless he had some kind of drastic downturn, he was going to be wide out one. And wide out one always faces QB or CB1, right?
Yeah.
And AZ talked about this in the practice report that good on good helps both of them get better. They both what I loved it, AZ talks about how after a play, they'll talk about, hey, this is what I'm seeing you do. And he'll say, this is what I'm seeing you do, and this is how I read this, right? And so that's going to help when Malik Benson is going up against Clemson's best DB, going up against Notre Dame's best DB, going up against Miami's best DB or Florida's best DB, right? That's where this comes into play. That's what's helpful now. So, yeah, he's not going to win every battle, every play, and AZ's not going to win every play. But, man, when they go up against the best of the best from the other schools, they're going to be a lot more prepared of that. I think wide receiver two, as you said, I agree with you. It's a battle between Kentron and Hakeem. I think this is, like you said, this is Kentron's year. He's got to do something this year. And he's shown bits and pieces, bits and flashes of what he can do when he stays healthy and when he's consistent. He can be a dynamic wide out too. Hakeem, his body, I mean, and please, I'm not trying to be weird. Dude looks like a man. I mean, he looks like an NFL player. And the coaches have raved about his mentals, about how he's showing up. He's showing consistency in that. But the player I want to talk about right now with the wide receiver is LaWayne McCoy. Yeah. That name is every practice report. Every week, Mike Norvell is saying his name. DJ is talking about LaWayne McCoy. This boy can play. I mean, he is going to be so hard. Obviously, you got Ja'Kai Douglas. You got Jalen Lucas, who are basically Cobb and Kyrie over there. But I would bet not. I'd bet my bathroom because I don't own my house, but I did some work on the bathroom. So I bet my bathroom that this dude is going to see the field a lot this season. LaWayne McCoy, just keep that name in mind. He is flashing every practice.
Yeah, he was actually next on my list to talk about because he has probably been the most talked about wide receiver outside of Malik Benson because people just want to know about Malik Benson.
That's right.
You know, everybody held their breath when he got injured in the spring game. It was like, oh, crap, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
But to see LaWayne McCoy emerge, again, this goes back to what we talked about with Cam Davis, Mekhi Dansby, and all these young guys. Like, man, the future, you can just see what Florida State's going to be going forward. And LaWayne McCoy is a great example of that. And, you know, they just said recently in the last practice takeaways episode that I watched was he's going against the starting DBs.
Yeah,
So, like, I think they're pressing him to make sure, like, okay, let's put you against the good competition.
Right.
Let's see where you stand. Because, like you said, I think he's going to see the field this year. I mean, obviously, we know, again, where if someone is to go down,
that's right,
the depth in that wide receiver room, experience depth is not a whole lot there. I mean, you still have Jaylen Brown, who's the guy that comes in from LSU, but he's really not that experienced. Like, you don't have a lot of experience behind him. So you're searching for who that next layer is. You know, we know who your top – you got Ja'Kai, you got Malik, you got Hakeem, and you got Portier. Those are your top-level guys. Darren Williamson, if you want to throw him in there. You're looking for that second level if something were to happen to those guys. And I think LaWayne McCoy is going to be a guy that's going to play his way onto the field. Mm. And, man, I'm just excited to hear about that as well, especially when you're doing it against the best DBs that you got.
Exactly.
So to round out the offense, tight end position, I think one, the top takeaway here is Kyle Morlock has really stepped up this offseason. Yep. You know, we knew last year that you had Jaheim, who was going to be your featured tight end. Coming from Division III was going to be hard, or Division II, or whatever shorter is. It was going to be an adjustment period. I mean, you just never went against that level of competition.
That's right.
He was a little light in the seat as well. I think he was like 250 pounds. I will say the first thing that I noticed in the film alone is that he is more physically developed.
Yes, he is.
He looks more grown this year. And actually, Mike Norvell talked about that at ACC Media Days. He said Kyle Morlock really took ownership of trying to prioritize developing himself physically in this offseason. For a couple of reasons, obviously to be a better, just tight end in general, but for also the blocking aspect as well, you know. And so I think he's going to do better in blocking this year. He's also worked on his pass catching because we know he did good last year, but he had some drops that probably shouldn't have happened.
Third down in Miami.
But so far, man, some of these catches you're seeing him make out of these highlights coming out of practice, like Morlock, it looks like he's going to have a really good year. And we know Mike Norvell likes to feature the tight ends. And you know, you've lost a few guys with Biscuit leaving and Raheem being out. So you need somebody to step up. And I think Morlock is more than ready to do that. Then obviously, I think it's kind of like Morlock and then everybody else. You know, you're still looking for what you're going to get out of Jackson West. Obviously, a big physical guy who can be a good blocker for you. But, man, I think really one of the things that caught me off guard more than anything about the tight ends is Amari Williams.
Okay, I was like, are you not going to talk about Amari Williams?
I still think it's Kyle Morlock, tight end one, and then everyone else is kind of a little bit behind where he's at. But Amari Williams, first off, came in as a defensive end.
That's right.
And as a freshman, but he's been working at tight end so far. And, like, apparently this is the LaWayne McCoy situation.
Yes.
They cannot stop talking about how good he is. And you know, I mean, you got a lot of other talented tight ends in that room. You know, I know you got your guy there as well. But, like, Amari Williams is stealing the show. And so, like, I think you're going to see him be able to contribute this year in this offense. But I think the tight end position, like, at least you feel really good about Kyle. Yeah. And he's also helping to mature those guys below him.
Yeah. Now, before I talk about this, you know, Landon Thomas, you're my boy. I'm rooting for you. Okay. You're just know I'm still in your corner, man. You're on my top five. Okay. But, you know, I Jesse, I'm a differ a little bit on you on this. I think absolutely what you said about Kyle Morlock is true. He's gotten more physical. You see the physique, you watch the practice film, you're seeing him make great catches, you're seeing him have a lot more presence on the line as he's blocking. I mean, you're seeing a much more developed Kyle Morlock, and I do think he is TE1 for sure.
Right. But that's what I'm getting at is more like, I don't think there's any question who's going to be your starter.
Yes.
That's Kyle Morlock.
Yes. I think Kyle Morlock is your day one Georgia Tech starter for sure. But I would bet the other side of my bathroom that Amari Williams is like right there close. And the reason I say that is just because of the way the coaches talk about him. As you and I always talk about, coach speak is coach speak, and it just sounds the same over and over again. But we've learned over the years of the Mike Norvell era, you can be able to sense a little bit of truth of what he's doing. And the fact that Amari keeps coming up, the fact that he keeps going to that space, he'll briefly talk about Morlock, and then he'll talk about Amari Williams. Talk about Mario. I think that battle is a little bit closer than the experts think.
No, I agree with that. I just, you know, to me, it's like he's still a freshman and he still has not played a lot of tight ends. So while he's done good, you're just kind of hoping that he can get up to speed fast. But also, I just wanted to look it up. 6'4", 219 as a freshman. And so, you know, when he committed, it was as an athlete. So you knew you were going to kind of get him to play both sides of the ball. So that size, I mean, that'll play even as a freshman. Play. So I just think, man, it's good. Again, these young guys.
These are good. Yeah.
I mean, it's just, man, it's so encouraging to hear. So let's flip on over to the defense here. The defensive line, I think what you're looking at for me, the biggest takeaways that I've had from the defensive line is your top guys are what you thought they were.
Yep.
Daryl Jackson, Josh Farmer, Pat Payton.
Yep.
Those three guys. Take the check to the bank. You're good to go. You know what they are. They're disruptive in practice. They don't win every rep. But again, like we talked about, you're going to get against a really good offensive line. We've seen their game film. We know what they are. They're going to be good. Then I think you're trying to find who's going to be that next set of guys to step up. So far, I'm thinking through just reading these practice reports, I think Sione Loholeha is going to be your other starter at defensive end. Again, this is a guy that came in very experienced, was an All-Pac-12 selection last year. Sounds like he's just kind of that steady Eddie at the position. I think he's going to be the one that you can trust to be out there. I think when you look at Durajai, I think this is a disruptive guy that has, you know, just has that potential. You're more steady with Loholeha because you see he's got a lot of experience. I think Durajai also is going to have to work inside a defensive tackle.
I was going to say,
I'm going to talk about that in a second. But I also think with the lack of talk about Marvin Jones Jr., and I do think that when you look at he was a full participant in spring and all that stuff, and so maybe there's something there. I don't want to insinuate or make any kind of claims that I don't know to be true. There could be some reasons they're holding him back, and if it's an injury issue or something like that. So I don't want to suspect that, you know, it's not that he's been not good. And from what I've read, like he's there.
He's practicing, participating.
Yeah. Right. I just think he's not going to be your starter this year. I think he's going to be DN3. behind Patrick Payton to come in and rotate on that side. I don't think he's going to take that starter spot, but that's okay because you knew that he's still young. He's still developing. He played mostly linebacker at Georgia. Right. So you were probably going to have him for 2 years anyway. And so I don't think it's a bad thing that you haven't heard a whole lot. I just think that maybe he's not where we thought he was going to be. And that's why it's good that you got a guy like Sione.
Right. Yeah.
And then, of course, Durajaye, again, I think he's going to have to work inside because the other name that we haven't heard, I don't know about you, Michael. I haven't literally heard straight crickets. I haven't heard anything about Grady Kelly.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if he's even at practice. of course he is. And I'm just
thinking
about that. He is. But I haven't heard much about that. And you know, we are positive as can be here. We don't typically dunk on players or anything like that. But, you know, after the spring game, we kind of both said we were not impressed with what he did in the spring game. And so that's not to mean that he can't have a place in this defense. That's not to mean that he's not going to be a contributor. They still got a couple of, you know, 15 practices or whatever to get him up to speed. Daniel Lyons is a name that's flashed a few times. I think he's definitely going to be a guy that can compete this year and give you some depth there. But I think Durajaye is going to have to work inside because the defensive tackles, you feel really good about your ones. You know, KJ Sampson was a guy that flashed in the spring. You got maybe two good guys there. But as far as experience goes, I mean, Durajaye has got the size to work inside.
Yeah.
I think he's going to have to because, I just don't think Grady Kelly is going to be Braden Fisk. And there's not a lot of people in the country that are Braden Fisk.
No, there's not. No.
It's just the quietness around it has been a little concerning for me.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Grady, you know, I've always, like we said, we watched the spring game. We walked away thinking, okay, yeah, this is, you know, last year when Braden Fisk, you're like, what is this dude? Like, who's this guy? And then immediately when the practice reports came out, when you saw spring, you were like, oh, they might got something here.
Yeah.
And I think with Grady, this is a depth piece. This is a piece that I imagine he'd be part of the rotation. Obviously they go too deep in their rotation with this.
Yep.
I imagine he'll see some time on the field, but he's not somebody that you're like, okay, this is a game changer. You know,
right.
The hope is that he comes in and he does what he needs to do. He holds the line until you bring the starters back in. That's what's important. That's what you saw last year when some of those rotational pieces came in. And I think that's kind of where Grady Field is at.
Yeah.
Like you said, you don't hear much about him. And again, to address the MJJ stuff, you know, there was speculation that, oh, he must be hurt, all this stuff. But then all the practice videos I've seen, they literally zoom in on him and are like, there's MJJ. You know, there he is right there. And so, like you said, maybe he's just not at where we thought he would be coming out of Georgia. Maybe because the position change of how we use the DE slash rover, as they call it, that defensive end to linebacker, how that rotates stuff. Maybe that's just new. Maybe he's just not as far as there, or maybe there could be. We don't like speculating here at Plant the Spear. There could be something we don't know, but I imagine that until the coaches say something, he's progressing along, he's learning, and I think he's going to see it. And I definitely think unless he's injured, he's going to be a part of that rotation, whether or not he's starting. I do think Lolohe is probably the starter right now on that other side of Pat Payton. Obviously, Pat Payton's in there, right? Obviously, Josh Farmer, obviously, Daryl Jackson. Daryl Jackson has been talked about over and over again. He's dominating as he normally does. Farmer, Payton as well, too. I saw a video of Payton running into practice, and I was like, dang, that dude got bigger. Like, I didn't think you could get, like, but not like fat, like, I mean, just more
mass.
Tone,
yeah,
mass. Like, gosh, Pat Payton looks like an NFL DE. So I think we kind of speculate. And then with Durajaye, I do think, I think more so he's going to see more time in the middle of that defensive line more than he will see on the edge. I think they'll move him around. They'll do stunts and twists and stuff like that. But I think a lot of his playing time is going to come in the middle to give a breather to Farmer and Jackson in that sense.
No, I do agree. And again, you know, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I also think that, you know, MJJ had some injury issue at Georgia, so maybe there's some lingering stuff there.
Okay.
But he's still, you know, they rotate heavily. So that's obviously, you know, you're going to have a chance for him to get in there. I think he is going to play for you. I think he's going to do fine. I just think, you know, the other thing you have to look at is the guys in front of him are pretty freaking good.
That's,
you know,
right.
Let's not forget that. And then, you know, the other thing, when you look at how you can use Durajaye, I think you will see him pushed inside a lot because the depth is lacking in the middle. That's where you hurt the most.
That's right.
But like some of the guys that we don't talk about that we know are pretty good that have been talked about in camp. You also have Byron Turner, who has taken a good step this year. And then, you know, Jaden Jones is a guy that gets overlooked.
That's right.
I mean,
that's
he came in as a JUCO guy that was hurt, 6'5", 240 on the roster. I mean, this is a guy that can contribute too. So you have an overflow of defensive ends. So I think that will give you the opportunity there. And you're right. When you look at Grady Kelly, he was brought in as a depth piece. That's what he was brought in.
That's right.
Because, you know, you lost a lot of the guys on your defensive tackle room last year. So you really needed somebody. And so I'm not saying he's going to be bad, but honestly, if you get 10 snaps a game out of him,
exactly,
that's good enough. And so let's go to the next position group, which, yeah, man, music to my ears. I honestly,
we have to eat our crow on this one, man.
This is where we felt the worst coming into the season. And I think this might be the most positive reports coming out of so far out of fall camp. And that's that linebacker, man. Let me just say, in our defense, had we not have gotten Cam Riley, we're probably not talking about this the same way. Apparently, Cam Riley is that dude. He is that dude in practice. And first off, I just want to say, on the roster, he is listed as 6'5", 237 pounds. So you bet not throw it over the middle.
Exactly.
That dude is
taking it to the house.
He's going to take everything from you. Apparently, he had a pick six on a screenplay the other day. So, like, his read and react is very good. He's got incredible size. He can cover. He can stop the run.
And he's intuitive. He's really good at accepting what the offense is trying to do.
Like, there might be – I don't know, man. He may not be the most – impactful or important addition of the offseason through the portal, but man, he might be one of the best additions because I mean, if he is what they say he is, and I would love to be at practice seeing it from my own eyes.
Me too.
Cause you kind of have to trust other people's opinions, but if he is what they say he is, he just took your linebacker room from like, oh man, I hope we're not bad to like, oh man, we might be good.
Yep.
And the other thing from the linebacker room is one, as we mentioned before, DJ Lundy has been limited. But here's the thing about DJ Lundy, and this is actually when you go back to what I talked to Mike Norvell about at ACC Media Days about the talent versus the experience, and when he said he thinks this team is actually experienced. That's kind of a myth. The first guy he pointed out was DJ Lundy. He's like, look, this guy has played since he's been a true freshman, so he has the experience. So for me, DJ Lundy has enough experience in this particular defense.
Yeah.
I don't care if you practice. Just get healthy before the season. Healthy. He knows the scheme. He knows what he's doing. I mean, obviously, you want to see him at least by Georgia Tech week be a full go. But for me, with him, just get healthy, man. That's all I'm worried about with DJ Lundy. But I think if you have DJ Lundy and Cam Riley as your two backers in, you know, the primarily 4-2-5 scheme that they run, I think you feel so much better about that position group. And then another guy that I got to give a shout out to that, frankly, took a lot of flack when we took him is Juice Cryer, Justin Cryer. And, you know, comes in from Northwestern, not the biggest guy, not the most athletic guy, but from, man, what they've been saying is like, his only limitation is his athleticism.
Because
as far as triggering, understanding the defense, getting in the right place, making the right reads, he is just as good as anybody in that room. And so I really do think he's going to be a viable option. I think the only place where you may have a concern with him is when you go against the Miamis, the Clemsons, the Notre Dames, where you might find him in coverage against a really, really good wide receiver or something like that. I think that's where you might get in trouble. But, you know, against some of the other teams, the Boston Colleges and stuff like that, where he matches up from an athletic perspective, I think he's going to be a really good option for you.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Blake Nicholson is also developing. I think he's going to be one of your best options as a coverage linebacker.
That's right.
So the thing I love about, and I'll kick it back to you on this, but the thing I love about the linebacker room is, one, it's been better than we expected.
Better.
First off, but I think you do have a good base of skill sets here.
Yes.
You have DJ Lundy, who, if I'm not mistaken, was the top graded run stopper by PFF last year. And then you have a guy like Juice Cryer, who, you know, if you're not the most athletic, but you're physical and you're smart, you can be a good run stopper.
Exactly.
And then you have Cam Riley and Blake Nicholson, who can kind of be that 1-2 punch on having a do-it-all guy. And
that's,
man,
right.
I'm just, these reports about Cam Riley are like, oh.
Thank you. We pray for these days.
Exactly. We pray for times like this. So, man, I'm just so happy to hear about Cam Riley showing out in camp. And you just hope that it transfers into the season. But, I mean, again, this is a guy that comes in with a SEC experience. So,
exactly.
6'5", 237.
You better not throw it over the middle. No, I agree. I have been so grateful. I think I took a deep sigh of relief every time I hear the linebacker group is actually doing well in practice, yep. I'm like, okay. Because, I mean, again, in this 4-2-5 defense and in college football in this day and age, a mediocre linebacker doesn't hurt you. A terrible linebacker devastates you, and a great linebacker turns your defense into elite, right? We've seen that over and over again. And so what we were saying was like, man, we just need them to be just consistently okay. Okay, then I think we can get it. So we're not saying that these are elite linebackers or anything of that nature, but all we're just saying is that the fact of the matter is that you're hearing about Cam Riley and the way he's leading, the way he's getting to plays, his athleticism, his intuitiveness, his ability to stop the run, his ability to be in coverage. And then what I also think is really key is that, and I thought you were going to get to this, is the fact that these linebackers outside of Cam Riley, who's a do everything linebacker, Blake Nicholson, who's still continuing to become a do everything, you can interchange them depending on down, distance, and situation. Right. If it's a clear run situation, you're going to put Juice Crier in there, right? Because you know that he can get down there, he can get into the run, right? If it's more of a pass situation, then you're leveraging Blake Nicholson. I've heard a little bit about DeMarco Ward being good in pass coverage as well, too. And so you can interchange these linebackers depending on the situation down and distance. And that's good. That makes the defense multiple in that sense as well, too. And so it's just good to know that there's a chance, the chance is higher than normal that we're going to get average to good linebacker play. Now, if we can go good to great, come on now.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's just you're in a much better position than you expected to be. And we haven't even talked about Sean Murphy yet.
Correct.
Now, he's kind of been a quieter guy through camp. Right, but he's still a guy that, I mean, I think he can at least contribute.
That's
for
right.
sure. And, you know, we also talked about with the linebackers where it was like, especially before you got Cam Riley, it's like, man, you just don't have any depth behind the guys that you know that can play. And so now it does seem like you have about four guys that you feel good about. So you have a little bit of depth there,
and
too.
And we keep forgetting about Omar Graham, who's, you know, who played a lot last year.
Right. And so, I mean, he's been a little quiet so far. Yeah. I haven't heard a whole lot there. But, you know, again, I just think it's, man, you're better than expected right now. And that's really encouraging because that was the one area that you could point to on this team that was kind of a weakness.
Yeah.
And now I don't think that's the case anymore. I think, like you said, you're going to be at least average to above average with the potential to be good. And that changes your defense because we saw what it did last year when you had good linebacker play. And so let's talk about a group that you don't have to really be worried about. We don't even really have, AZ Thomas, Finchel Cypress, Shaheem. That's it in the episode. I think you feel pretty good about, you know, talking about the secondary. Obviously, you have two guys here that I think are going to be two of the best corner or probably one of the best corner duos in the country. I mean, AZ is a guy that, again, he played a lot as a freshman and you know, they lived with some of the mistakes because they knew he was going to be really good. Right. You wanted to get him up to a developmental stage. You wanted to get through that so he could be ready when the other guys move on. And now that it's his time to start, I mean, I don't know that there's been one bad thing said about AZ Thomas at all in practice. Right. So I think him and Fentrell, and you know, Fentrell, I mean, he was pretty good last year. Yeah, he had a few ups and downs, but I also think when you look at it, like there are teams that went after him last
year. That's right.
Because they thought, you know, they had Renardo on the other side. They thought they could go after him. So, and he, you know, was he perfect? No. But did he make a lot of good plays for Florida State? Yes, he certainly did. And, you know, we also can turn back the clock to when he was at Virginia and look at the game field and what, and the film there. And I think it was like a stretch of four ACC games where he gave up like one completion. So we know he can be good. And now I think another year with Sertan, another year in this defense, he's going to be, these are two of the best corners you're going to find in the ACC, probably even in the country. When I asked about the experience thing, he said, you know, I think AZ is going to be a first-round draft pick. That's what he told me. And so then I think when you look behind them at the corner position, you have a couple of young guys that are still flashing. Ricky Knight is another name that keeps coming up a lot. Again, look to the future of this team. Yes. There's so much talent there. Charles Lester has been a guy that has flashed a few times. So I think you really want those two to be on the field 99.99% of the time.
Right.
But you also feel like you've got some guys behind them that can be very serviceable against at least, you know, some of the teams that maybe don't have a great passing offense.
Right.
But as long as you got AZ and Fentrell on the field, you feel really good. Behind that, you also got Earl Little, who's been working at that nickel spot.
That nickel, yeah.
You've heard, you know, good, maybe not like he's dominant or anything right. like that, but you've seen him make a lot of good plays. You've That's seen right. a lot of positive reports. So I think he's going to be perfectly fine there. I mean, the guy is an exceptional athlete. We heard a lot coming out of Alabama where a lot of people That's thought right. he should have started. You know, he went against a talented offense when he was, you know, Alabama's offense wasn't the greatest, yeah. but he was working against some good receivers there. And they said, man, he's just a sticky guy. And a lot of people felt he should have started for Alabama. So
yeah.
I'm not really worried about him there. It's just how fast can he pick up this defense? Then looking at the safety spot, Shaheem is
obviously
that,
Shaheem.
That guy.
He's
like
the captain. Yeah.
He is your Akeem Dent. You know what I mean? And I think he is that staple guy who is going to hold down that one safety spot. Good things coming out of camp so far. Been not only a good player, but good from a leadership standpoint. Yep. Pulling yep. guys to the side and things like that. Haven't heard a whole lot about who's emerging at that number two spot, whether it's Hussey, who, I mean, I haven't heard anything bad. That's the good no. thing. You haven't heard anything bad. You haven't heard about maybe one guy who isn't performing well. You just really haven't heard about too many guys emerge, like one particular guy emerging.
Right.
But the good thing is you have him. You also have Devontae Brown.
That's right.
And then you also bring back Amarion Cooper.
That's right.
You have multiple options. And, you know, Amarion was a guy that worked at corner and safety before. So again, this is a guy. And then Kevin Knowles as well.
That's right.
You have those two. So the thing is, you have options. I mean, you have guys that are multiple, which is what they like on the back end. So, like, you know, talking about that number two at corner, you have the other, you have Amarion who can step in. Talking about safety, you have 4 to 5 guys That's that are right. fighting for that number two spot. So I think the depth and the talent in the secondary, I mean, it's hard to say it's the best we've had in a long time because we always usually do have a second
right.
good secondary. But, man, I think as much as you're losing from last year, I don't think they're going to take a step back at all. They might even take a step forward.
Oh, no. I mean, again, I think this is going to be the strength of not only just the defense, but of the entire team. I think FSU's pass defense is going to be, again, top, one of the most elite in the country. You got two of the best corners in all of the country in AZ Thomas and Fincho Sipas. And I think Fincho Sipas is going to make his Ricardo Green upgrade. You know, Ricardo, when Green first played his first year, you know, he was good. You know, he struggled. And then last year, he was elite. And I think Fincho came in and adjusted to the new defense. He wasn't bad by any stretch of the imagination. He just had moments where you're like, oh, Fincho, come on, man. Like, you got to get there. You got to get that pick. You got to get that tackle. But then I think this year he now steps into, he's more confident in the defensive calls. He's more confident in the schemes and the understanding. I think he makes that leap. I think AZ, and not to put pressure on AZ, not to, but that boy's the next coming of Jalen Ramsey. I'm just saying that boy looks good. I mean, again, he's going up against the best wide receiver at Florida State, right? So he's winning some, he's losing some, but that's only preparing him to be just as dynamic. And he was really good last year. And so I think he's going to be as great. Well, obviously, Shaheem, and he's the leader. I call him the captain. I don't know if he's actually the team captain, but he's the captain. He's going to be in charge of getting that defense set, making sure they're ready to go. I think he's got that position locked down. Jesse, I actually think because we're not hearing a lot about the other safety position, this might be an opportunity where I've read somewhere where somebody who gets access to the practice report had said something in the effect of that you might see a rotation in that second safety spot where, you know, one player has this many, and they're just trying to find in this early game, okay, who's going to be that consistently player in that spot and then the backup that. But you might early on, in the first couple games, see a lot of rotating at that safety spot as well.
I could see that too, because, I mean, again, Georgia Tech has a good passing offense.
That's right.
You know, BC, Lord knows, Thomas Castellanos tore us up last year. But at the same time, man, I do agree. And I think when you look at Hussey, that's a guy that probably has the most talent in the room.
Right.
But you also have a lot of experience there
that's
too.
Right.
And so, again, it always comes back to that talent versus experience. What do you trust? But the good thing is, like you said, you got depth and competition
right.
to work on that. But, yeah, man, I mean, you know, the worst part about having AZ is, like, this is probably going to be it. You know what I mean? Like, you want him to have a really, really great season, but if he does, then this is going to be
like,
it.
Right.
But that's a potential first round draft pick. But again, like we just talked about, all the talented guys that are behind him, you know, one more year of development, and then you could see a Charles Lester step up.
That's
you could see a Ricky Knight step up. So, man, just really excited about them. And then to close out the practice stuff, obviously special teams, you know, it was a weapon for us last year. And frankly, it was not a weapon for us a couple years ago. So having good special teams is going to be big. And so far, you know, I think it's cool, man. You saw some of the clips on social media of like the pressure situation they put their kickers in, where the entire team stands around them. Like, it's man, I would be nervous. I would probably ping it off somebody's helmet, you know, like 3 yards to the or 30 yards to the left and into the ground. But, you know, I think first off, you got Jake Weinberg, who nailed one. And that kid's talented. I mean,
that kid's got a leg.
He is going to be excellent for Florida State going forward. And you feel a lot better, you know, no offense to, I think it was Tyler Keltner last year who really didn't. They still stuck with Fitzgerald, who had a big bounce back season. But if he were to struggle, you feel good about Weinberg.
Yeah.
Obviously,
magic is real, though.
Yeah. He was the top rated kicker coming in. But then you see the next day, they're like, OK, well, the freshman had ice in his veins. Let's give some love to the vet. And Ryan Fitzgerald hit the same kick with the same
kicker situation. Stone cold killer.
Right. So, man, I think you got good kickers there as well. And then I did ask Norvell about special teams there, too, at ACC Media Days. And he said, you know, it's a game changer for them, especially with Master Mono. He thinks he's the best punter in the nation and he's an absolute weapon for them. Right. And from all reports, he's had a good camp as well. So, a lot to come out of special teams. You know, just good news. You also got Deuce Spann working at kick return and Jalen Lucas, which is so crazy to see them two standing back there. Like, I think Deuce could probably put Jalen on his back and they could just like, you know, do some kind of fake or something like that. It'd be interesting. You got one guy that's like 6'4 and one that's 5'10. So it's going to be 5'9. It's going to be so interesting to see that. But yeah, man, super excited to see what they can do in the return game this year, because it can be a game changer for them. That's right. There may be a situation where that does change the game for them. So that's going to wrap it up for the practice reports. Let's just do we'll go to hurry up offense here because we're already over an hour. But we'll talk about the preseason ACC stuff that just come out. This was a poll that I actually got to vote in being at preseason or ACC media days. And I had Florida State as my number one. And so to give you the top order here, Florida State comes in at number one, picked to be the preseason ACC champion with 81 first place votes. Clemson was number two with 55 first place votes. Miami did come in at number three, but they were a distant third in first place votes with only 17. NC State was fourth with 8 first place votes. Then you had Louisville, Virginia Tech, who got 5 first place votes. Newcomer SMU came in 7th. UNC, Georgia Tech actually got a first place vote. I met a really nice Georgia Tech guy at ACC Media Days. I'm probably sure that's who voted for him. Cal was a surprise. 10th in voting, but 2 first place votes. So I don't know. I don't know, man. They're California people. Maybe they had a couple brownies on the flight over or something like that. Then you had Duke at 11th, Syracuse at 12th, Pitt at 13th, Boston College all the way down at 14th, and also had a first place vote. That's a little weird. Wake Forest at 15th, UVA at 16th, and Stanford just, you know, continuing to do Stanford things down at 17th. You know, it's funny. Actually, it's funny when we talked about – there's a lot of questions at Media Days about – the new NCAA 25 game and, you know, how players have played it and all that. And they, someone was telling me, they asked a Stanford guy about it. And he's like, man, I don't even have a gaming system. You know, he's probably in like the science lab or something, like doing some kind of
solving
experiment.
World hunger or something.
Exactly. So it's so funny, the difference, but you know, I think it's huge for Florida State to come back and be number one to defend that crown after losing so much that the confidence, you know, and again, a lot of these people that vote is 170 media members. A lot of these people are from the Carolinas. So you could see where they might pick a different team, not Florida State, especially, you know, with the way they feel about us
right
now currently. But, you know, I think for me, when I went through and I looked at this, obviously the talent is big. And I think when you look, just to kind of summarize my thought process on how I voted, was Florida State, Clemson, and Miami are obviously your three leaders in talent. And then I think when you look at Virginia Tech, they're the most experienced team. They're number one in returning production in the country. They actually have a pretty decent schedule. And I think NC State is a contender because, one, they got Grayson McCall, who comes in at quarterback and gives them a little stability at that position. They also have some good receivers and some good running backs. They always have a pretty decent defense, but they got basically Louisville's schedule from last year.
That's,
you know, Louisville coming into the season was like, man, they got a cakewalk in the ACC schedule.
Gosh.
And they made the ACC championship game. So that's kind of NC State this year.
Yeah.
I actually, you know, man, I debated on this back and forth for a while. I actually had Virginia Tech as my number two team here to make the ACC championship game. And that's just because when you look at them, they return so much. Kyron Jones, you know, even though he just kind of ran his mouth a little bit about how Doak wasn't good, but, you know, obviously he got blown out there. So you might want to watch what you say there, buddy. it was obviously tough that day. But, you know, I just think, man, with what they got coming back, really they're all, if they don't lose the games that they should win, if they don't get upset, they got Miami on the road and Clemson at home. You win one of those two, because really when you look at the ACC this year, one of the things that I find interesting is I think there are so many pretty good teams. Like, I think you have Florida State, Clemson, and Miami up top. And then I think like 4 through 7, man, it's tough to call. I went back and forth a lot on how to seed these teams to submit my ballot. And really, I think you're going to have a slim margin of error. I think there's going to be a lot of one-loss ACC teams because there's a lot of good teams. And so I think, I think if you lose more than one ACC game, you might not control your destiny. And really, I think for Virginia Tech, if they win one of those two games, they have a good chance. Now, Miami, I think, should be in Charlotte. They should play for the ACC championship. They got everything going their way. They got their quarterback. It's year three. They got talent. I just don't trust that coaching staff. I also think Cam Ward is a little bit overhyped. And then, they do get some of their toughest games, Virginia Tech and FSU at home. They go to Louisville and Georgia Tech. We'll see if they can see if they got a victory formation installed yet. I think with Clemson too, man, I get number two. They're still one of the most talented teams in the country. But like, is Cade Klubnik going to turn it on this year? Or is he going to have another kind of tough season? They actually have a relatively tough ACC schedule. They get NC State at FSU versus Louisville at Virginia Tech. And they're replacing a lot. So, man, I don't too much argue with the slating of the ACC teams here and the way they came out. I had, again, Florida State at 1, Virginia Tech at 2, Miami at 3. I had SMU at 4 ahead of Clemson because their ACC schedule is pretty easy. They only get, I think it's Florida State and then Louisville in back-to-back weeks. Everything else after that is pretty easy. Yeah. I think there's about three teams that are going to be competing, and then there's about four teams behind them that could all be contenders to make it to Charlotte.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, again, if I had been there, I would have put Florida State number one. I actually don't necessarily disagree. I know last year was a flash in the pan for Clemson not being as great, but you got to remember they did go on to win, I believe, 5 straight games to end the season and then winning the bowl game as well against Kentucky. Until you slay that dog, I'm going to keep thinking it's going to rise up again. Right. Yeah. Dabble has proven in his time at Clemson that he can get him ready. He can get him prepared. I mean, he's won 2 national championships. They've been in the hunt, almost every year, Deshaun Watson, all like that stuff. So I'm okay with Clemson being at number 2. I think Miami, I would agree with you in the sense of that. I think Miami has the schedule that if this coaching staff can get their butts out of their head and get their head out of the butts, I think that's what I meant to say, and actually like coach and do something, they could be right there at Charlotte, right there. I mean, their hardest game is outside of their non-conference game is Florida State coming to Miami. I mean, that's going to be their hardest game to play. And so again, obviously I'm predicting us to win that game. So they might have definitely one loss in the ACC. But they should be able to have the schedule to be able to compete for a chance to play at Charlotte. I think Florida State has probably the more difficult schedule of the ACC.
Yeah.
And I think Clemson might be there as well, too. The easiest is definitely NC State and Miami. And so, listen, if there's a year for them to show up, this would be the year.
Yeah, I think really anything short of an ACC championship appearance, they may not win it. Man, I think that's it's a letdown on their part. And one thing that I did mean to say about us is I think our schedule is harder than people think. Yes. I really do. Yes. I mean, Phil Steele has it rated as 12th hardest in the country. Like, Cal is not a bad team. No. They got one of the best. I mean, I gave Jade Knott one of my votes for ACC running back of the year or whatever. It's funny, actually, I didn't know this until media days, but apparently Cal's quarterback is from Miami. Mm. He was a Miami fan, only got a walk-on offer. So he went to Cal and I was like, how you feel about, playing them two teams? So he said, man, very awesome kid. I mean, really awesome kid. Didn't have any, he didn't give you any kind of stuff. The one thing about Florida State for me is even with that hardest schedule, the reason I put them back, even losing all that stuff is one, this is technically the most talented team Mike Norvell has had at Florida State.
Yep.
And I know Dabo's got two rings on his hand or whatever from national championships. They have not been the team that since they lost the coordinators, Tony Elliott, Jeff Scott, and Venables, they have not been the same team.
Yeah.
And I think Mike Norvell is the best coach in the ACC at maximizing talent. And we've talked about that before. Yep. So that's why I think Florida State, even with a little bit of a harder schedule, is still going to make it back.
Yeah.
You know, even if they were to drop an ACC game, I still think they'll make it back. And so to round out the all ACC stuff, the first team all ACC did get released. Florida State had four players on there: Darius Washington, Maury Smith, Josh Farmer, and Alex Mastromano. I think I'm pretty sure I voted for all those guys to be all ACC. The one that caught me off guard was I voted for Patrick Payton. I like when I went to the defensive end, I was like, well, I'm going to look through the rest of the list, but I already know one of my spots. Click and drag Pat Payton up there. I'm surprised he didn't make the list. Yeah. I really am. Miami actually had five players on there. Little surprised by that. But, you know, when you look at the defensive end, Reuben Bain made it on there. And the kid from Louisville, who's very good. I mean, you only get to put two in there. But, man, I really do feel like Pat Payton was a little bit snubbed there, but hope. Maybe he'll use that as some motivation, but, you know, overall looking at, again, this goes back to Miami. You had the most players to make preseason all ACC in the conference. If you don't produce this year, man, you might as well just box things up and close that. You give it the death penalty because it's never going to happen. If you can't make it happen this year, it might not ever happen. But, you know, congratulations to those guys for making the preseason all ACC team. Obviously, you got to go out and earn it.
That's right.
You know, and we'll see how things end up at the end of the season. But, you know, just, man, again, this stuff starts coming out. You get these preseason polls and all this stuff. That means we're close. And and to mention, Cam Ward got preseason ACC Player of the Year. I knew that was going to happen. It's a polarizing name. You know, we'll talk about that later in a Miami preview. I think that's, you know, I think we're overselling that a little bit. But I did get to talk to him, too. He does know about the FSU rivalry. Super respectful kid. Nothing against him personally or anything like that. He was a good interview, but, you know, just really excited to start seeing the preseason stuff come out. It's cool to see Florida State favored as the team to repeat. And, you know, it looks like if this is right, we're going to get that matchup we thought we were going to get last year, where you might have to play Clemson twice. Cause, you know, that's what we all thought last year.
Yeah, we did.
Then the Duke game happened and we were like, whoa, what happened here? So, you know, I think it just really depends on their quarterback situation. If Klubnik can step up, and, you know, they lost basically their entire defensive line. So, but they're bringing a lot of talent back. So we might see that Florida State Clemson matchup for the second time of the year, like we planned on last time. But Michael, unless you have any more thoughts, man, I think that's going to probably do it for this one. I know this was a little bit long, but we had some catching up to do, and we had actual football to talk about. So you can probably tell the excitement in our voices to actually get to talk about fall camp and all the things that are leading up to the season. So, unless you have any other thoughts, man, I think we'll just close it out here. Make sure you guys check out Alumni Hall FSU, our title sponsor for this show. I mean, again, we're 3 weeks from kickoff. Now, whether you're going to Ireland or not, you might be 4 weeks from your first game in Tallahassee. So go get some new gear from those guys. Use code SPEAR to save 10%. And, of course, stay tuned to Plant the Spear. Drop a like and subscribe. Hit the notification bell so you don't miss some of these episodes coming up. We're going to record probably two or three of them today, two or three more next week. It's really going to start ramping up, so you guys don't want to miss out. Like I said, I got a ridiculous quarterback preview coming up, so make sure you guys check that out. Stay tuned to Plant the Spear for all your FSU coverage, and we appreciate you guys tuning in. Until the next one, go Noles.
Go Noles.